Okay, this is the last of our weeks in Psalms as we've been looking at the Psalms across the summertime, the last of our weeks. And I'm going to finish with perhaps the best known of all of the Psalms. So we're going to look at Psalm 23 this morning. It's one of those Psalms which is a bit of a kind of, a bit of a risk preaching on, because everybody, or most people, will know the psalm very well, and most people, it will have connotations for them wherever they've been and wherever they've heard it. But I hope and I pray that God brings something fresh and something new into this morning for you, and that word just drops into your heart, that word in season drops into your heart, and he speaks to you. Let's read it together. Psalm 23, and I'm reading from the NIV translation. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. As I said, this is probably the best known of all of the Psalms, and written by David, written by King David. He was the shepherd boy, so he had a really good insight into what it was to be a shepherd. You know, I was thinking about sheep and thinking about shepherds, and out the back of our house, if you've not been to our house, our house backs onto fields, onto farmland behind, and it's sheep that are in the field behind us. And those sheep are really interesting to watch because they behave in very strange ways sometimes. And you do see them, one sheep running off and then all the other sheep running after them. And then you see them kind of standing. We have a dog, and the dog likes nothing better than to run to the end of the garden and bounce up and down barking to make all the sheep move. Something really strange happened last week, though, and the dog was out the back, and I could hear her. She was going absolutely nuts, and I thought, usually that's a sign that the farmer's in the field with the sheep dog, because she reckons, why is she on this side of the fence and it's there and getting to play with the sheep and she doesn't. So that's what it sounded like. And when I looked out the back window, there was the dog at the end of the garden, and it's only a barbed wire fence at the end, so she can see through it. So she was virtually bouncing on all four paws, barking her head off. And here was this great big, what could only be described as a posse of sheep, all clumped together, standing, staring her out, absolutely facing her off, and they wouldn't move. And the more they faced her out, the more irate she got and the louder she barked. And I had no idea what was going on. And I shouted to Alistair to go and look out the window up the stairs and see what the dog was doing, or the sheep was doing at the dog, not the dog doing at the sheep. And he said, he came running down the stairs and he said, there's a fire at the bottom of the field. And actually, when we looked at it, the sheep were more willing to take their stand with the mad dog that they knew couldn't get to them than they were to go anywhere near the fire. And I thought that was really, really interesting. I have to tell you, there's no great quantum leap into Psalm 23 from that. It was just an interesting sheep story that I thought I would share with you. But it is really interesting when you start to watch the behaviour of sheep. And David knew all about sheep, much more than I do. David knew lots and lots about sheep, being the shepherd. And he understood that the thing about shepherds and sheep at that time was that the shepherd would actually literally lay down his life for the sheep. So at night time, when the shepherd gathered the sheep together and gathered them perhaps into a sheepfold on the hillside, the sheepfold very often didn't have a gate on it. And the way the shepherd protected the sheep was he lay down in the gap, so the sheep couldn't get out, and any predator would have to get to him first before they got to the sheep. So shepherds really did lay down their life for their sheep. And that ties in really well, doesn't it, with John 10, when we heard Jesus in John 10 talks about being the good shepherd and about how he would lay down his life for the sheep. And as we go through Psalm 23 this morning, I just want you to keep in mind that this psalm is about the good shepherd. The psalm is about Jesus. And it's about Jesus and who he is and about his relationship with his sheep. It starts, the Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. You see, this psalm starts with the Lord. It's actually all about him. And I think that so often we make our faith and we even make the Bible all about us. This is actually all about him. It's the Lord that it starts with. It's all about him. And you know, it's hard sometimes for us to get our head around that actually it is all about him. He's God and I'm not. And actually he quite likes it that way. One of the last times that I was speaking here, that I was speaking on a Sunday morning, I was really convicted because just before I came up to speak and I was trying to think, I remember thinking, I'm not sure what I'm going to say, I'm not sure what I'm doing with this. I think I know where I'm going with it. And that was the conversation I was having in my head the last time I was speaking. And in the midst of worship, God cut straight in and he said to me, I ain't come to hear what you have to say this morning. Because actually you're not telling me anything I don't know already. And I thought, oh man, okay. And you know, I've lived with that through the last months, and it's absolutely true. God didn't come to hear anything smart that I'm going to say this morning, because he has heard it all already, because actually it's all about him, and it's not about me, and it's not about you. It actually is all about him. And the thing is that could almost suggest to us that we have a very egocentric God who's really into himself. Well, actually, he is really into himself. Because he's God and he knows exactly who he is. And in actual fact, he doesn't need anything else or anybody else because he's perfectly self-contained. He's perfectly happy with who he is. But you know, he chooses us and invites us into relationship with us. Even though he's God and we're not, his choice is you and his choice is me. Isn't that an amazing place to start? With the psalm this morning, that actually his choice is you. That the Lord that it's all about, his choice is you and his choice is me. Not that he needed us, not that he ever needs us to do anything in particular, but he chooses because actually that's his heart, is for relationship and for community with you and with me. And you see, even before we get out of that first verse, there's even more in there because it's not just about the Lord. It's the Lord is my shepherd, is what David writes. He doesn't write the Lord is our shepherd. And of course, he is our shepherd and we are his flock and all the rest of it. But see, for David, this is personal. This is actually not about the person sitting next to him. This is about him. It's personal. It's up close and it's personal. The Lord is my shepherd because actually, he knows who I am and he knows who you are this morning and he knows where you're sitting. So what he wants to say this morning is not just to the person sitting to the left or to the right of you or behind you. What he wants to say is to you this morning because it's personal. You know, sometimes in this world we feel overlooked. Sometimes we think that everybody else is noticed apart from us, and actually sometimes that's true. Sometimes nobody notices how we feel. Nobody notices what our needs are. But you see, Psalm 23 says that the Lord is my shepherd. It's personal. He has not overlooked me, and he has not overlooked you. He doesn't just see us as one of the many in the flock. He actually sees who you are. We're noticed by him, we're loved by him, and we're known by him. And yet we're still invited to be in relationship with him. And I don't know about you, but I think that's really good news for me because, as I said when I was praying earlier on this morning, I know what I'm like. And in actual fact, because I know that he knows what I'm like, I think, man, why would you bother with me? But he does, because I'm known and I'm loved by him and I'm chosen by him. And the same is true for you. I'm trying to try and stand very still. What about I shall not want? See, when the Lord is my shepherd, then he provides absolutely everything that I need. You see, there's no lack as far as this shepherd is concerned. He knows what I need, and he knows where to get it, and he knows how to give it to me. Sometimes I might have a bit of trouble receiving what it is that I need, but that's not a problem in terms of lack from him. That's about my receiving. You see, he has all the resources required to meet whatever it needs you have because of what he's called you to do. So there is no lack in him. He doesn't lack finance. He doesn't lack inspiration and ideas. He doesn't lack vision. He doesn't lack comfort. He doesn't lack truth. He doesn't lack anything. And he wants to give it to us because he doesn't want us to be in want. So the Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. You see, there are many things I think that God could make me do. Now, he doesn't. He chooses not to make me do anything because he loves me. But in actual fact, this is the God of the whole universe who said the word and the world came into being. So my estimation of that is that tells me that he is actually quite powerful. That tells me that he could really do anything he ever wanted to do. And he could make me do anything at all. But in Psalm 23, what it is that he makes me do is he makes me lie down in green pastures. He doesn't make me get up and do whatever it is he's told me to do, whatever it is I should be doing in my job that day. He doesn't make me get up and do the dishes. He doesn't make me get up and be nice to people. He makes me lie down in green pastures. And I think that's really interesting because that speaks to me about rest and it speaks to me about security and it speaks to me about safety. He actually wants me to work and to live from a place where I can lie down because he's there, where I can lie down and not be fearful, where I can lie down and have what I need and rest from that place and come from that place of rest, which is where he knows is the best place for me to function from. Apparently, sheep need four things before they'll lie down. And I was actually thinking about this and thinking, we don't often see the sheep in the field out the back lying down. It doesn't happen very often. They're normally kind of wandering around. And even at night time, when you go out in the pitch black, you hear the noises of them chewing or ripping up the grass, even though it's pitch black and you can't see them. So even then, they're not always lying down. But apparently, sheep need four things to lie before they'll actually lie down. They need to feel safe. They need to not be irritated by parasites or flies or anything like that. There needs to be, and this is a really interesting one, no disharmony in the flock. I didn't know that sheep could fall out and have and there'd be disharmony, but apparently, so the website, we don't believe everything you read online, but hey, you know, it was a good analogy. And they need to be well fed. So they need four things before they're prepared to lie down. And you see, I think that we need some stuff before we're able to lie down too. We actually need to recognize who it is that's saying it's okay to come and lie down. We need to recognize how big he is and how much he provides for us and how safe we are with him. But the invitation is to come and to lie down. The invitation is for us to take some time to rest. And that doesn't necessarily mean sleeping, because we can rest in our busyness as well. We can lie down in our busyness because we know the security and the peace who he is. So he makes me lie down in green pastures, and then he leads me beside the still waters. You see, after we've lain down in the green pastures and recognized who he is and know the relationship that we have with him, he doesn't say, that's fantastic, you've got it sussed, now on you go. He doesn't do that, because what he does is he leads us from the meadows into where the streams of the still water are. But the important thing is that he leads. You see, the God that we serve, Jesus doesn't kick us out and say, get on with it. Jesus says, come on, I'll show you. And if you read the Gospels, that's what he did while he was here. He said, come on, I'll show you. Now you go and have a shot yourself and then come back and let me know how it is. It's not about kicking us out and telling us to get on with it. It's about him saying, come on, I'll lead you. Jesus leads and Jesus guides. And the interesting thing, again, about sheep is, apparently, sheep will only drink from still water. Sheep don't like fast-flowing water. They won't go near it to drink. So in order to encourage a sheep to drink, you do actually have to lead them to where the water is still. And I thought one of the interesting things about this when I was thinking about it was that it doesn't say he leads me beside the still waters and gets me to drink. It just says he leads me beside the still waters. And that started me thinking about the fact that when the shepherd leads us beside those still waters, it's our choice as to whether we drink or we don't drink. It's not that the water's not good. And Jesus says that he's the living water, and anybody that comes to him won't thirst ever again. But you see, we have a choice as to whether we drink from that living water. And he let us make that choice, but it is a choice. He leads us to the place where we can be never thirsty again. He leads us to himself, where we can drink from him and never ever be thirsty again. But it's then our choice what we do. So he leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. The psalm moves from the outward needs of the rest and the water and all the rest of it onto the inward needs and the needs of the soul. I don't know about you, but the tulips in my house usually look like the ones on the left-hand side, and they don't look as if they're really functioning particularly well as tulips, not like the ones on the right-hand side. And when I looked at those two pictures, I began to think that for some of us, our souls actually feel like the tulips on the left-hand side. We're weary, we're tired, we've had enough. We just stop the world, I want to get off. But you know, the promise in this psalm is that he restores my soul. And you see, I think there's something about those quiet streams that he leads us beside that we can drink from and drink from him in that's about restoring our soul. You see, I can't restore my soul myself. I need somebody to help me do that. I need someone to do it for me. And he is the one who restores my soul. And you know, for some of you here this morning, you've been hurt by life. For some of you, you've been hurt by decisions that other people have made. You've been hurt by decisions that you've made yourself. You've been hurt by choices. You've been hurt by things that have gone on round about you. And actually, you carry wounds in your soul. Carry wounds. Sometimes we talk about your heart being sore, you talk about your heart being wounded. He is the one who wants to restore your soul, and he can do that, but you have to allow him to do it. So he restores my soul. And the next one, he leads me on the paths of righteousness for his name. You see, once I'm healed up and all the rest of it, it's not again that he just says, well, that's you done now, I'm off. He still takes us by the hand and he begins to lead us down the way that we actually should have gone all the time, down the way that was the path that he prepared for us. Why does he do that? Well, he doesn't do it because he wants to control us. He does it for his name's sake. And the interesting thing about his name's sake is, in Hebrew, the name was all important because your name just wasn't how someone made the difference between you and somebody else. The name was all about the character of the person. And you see, his character is love. The essence of who he is love. And he loves you and he loves me. And he wants us to lead us on these paths that are good paths to go on. You see, the lie that the world has told us is that he's nasty, and that he's waiting for us to trip up and he wants to catch us out, and then he wants to tell us that we've done a bad job and he wants to judge. And of course, the judgment of God is a very important part of what we believe. But do you know, the essence of God, the essence of God, and I would say the essence rather than the attribute of God, is love. The essence of him is love. His love is what draws us. His love is what keeps him saying, come and walk on this path with me. Come walk down this. Perhaps the verse from Psalm 23 that many of us know and would associate with funerals is the next one, that even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and staff, they comfort me. The rod and the staff are really interesting because the rod and the staff for a shepherd were two different things. The rod was a very much thicker thing than the staff was, and the rod was used for protection. The shepherd would throw it at predators and would drive off, almost like a club that he would beat predators off with, and it also disciplined wayward sheep. The staff was a much thinner thinner tool that the shepherd used, and that staff was used for rounding up and for guiding the sheep and also for getting the sheep out of difficult situations that they'd managed to get themselves into. So I suppose that's a bit like the shepherd's crook that would pull the sheep out of wherever they were. And you see, I think that there is such comfort in that, that God not only walks with me through the valley, and it is through the valley of the shadow of death. He doesn't say stop and admire the scenery. He says, "I walk, even though you walk through the valley," so it's a place that you keep going in, But even though we do that, he comes with all the tools that are needed in order to help us to get through that particularly difficult place. And you know, that verse also tells us that there is no place that's dark enough or scary enough that he won't go with us. A few years ago, I heard a guy speak who was a shamanic teacher, he was. I'm not advocating shamanism or anything else, so I don't think that's where this is going. But the guy talked about what he believed, and part of what he believed was that as people go through life, their souls get hurt, and part of their soul disappears off. And his job as the shamanic teacher was to go and find the parts of their soul and restore their soul, Psalm 23-ish. But he was being the shepherd, where Jesus is the shepherd in Psalm 23. And so he talked about the fact that the place that he was most terrified to go in the spirit world for him was a place that was called the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And he said that he'd been working with a lady, and this stuck in my mind, that he'd been working with a lady a couple of weeks before and realized when he put, what he did was put himself into some kind of trance and then off into the spirit world somewhere. That's certainly how he explained it. And he had to go and retrieve part of this lady's soul. And when he started off on his journey, he could ask for a spirit guide to help him. And so he talked about getting to realizing that he was standing at the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And even as he talked to us, his whole face drained white. And he found it really difficult to get the words out because he was terrified of this place that he had seen when he was in that place with him. Looking for the lady's soul or part of the lady's soul. And he talked about standing there, and as he stood, and he talked about, not a Christian, as he stood there saying, the only spirit guide that I know that can get me through the valley of the shadow of death is the spirit of Jesus. That's what he said. And he said, as I stood there, I said, spirit of Jesus, will you come? And he said, all of a sudden, there was a man standing in front of me in brilliant white. And he said, the darkness of the valley disappeared in front of me, and every step he took, the valley lit up, and I could follow him through. Now, there's a whole pile of theology in there and all the rest of it, but what I want to say to you is that actually there is no place dark enough that Jesus can't light up. And I thought that was amazing, that somebody who didn't know Jesus would call out to Jesus to be the one to rescue him from this dark, dark place. And actually, Jesus' love is so great for him that Jesus showed up. There is no valley that's dark enough or deep enough or scary enough that Jesus will not show up in. And the truth is there for you, and the truth is there for me in that too. He prepares a table. Thank you. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. There's a banquet set for you. There's a banquet set that he invites you to. And interesting, in Luke 14, Jesus talks about that banquet too, and he talks about how some people who got invitations to that banquet knocked them back because they were too busy. There is a banquet that is prepared for you and for me that he invites us to, a place where he supplies all our needs. And the interesting thing is that he does it in the presence of our enemies. So those who would try to knock us off course, the things around us, fear, doubt, worry, anxiety, hopelessness, self-doubt, doubt in other people, all of those things that would try and knock us off course can't get anywhere near us when we're at the banqueting table with him. And the promise is that that's what's there for us. And the invitation is, will you come and will you join him at the banqueting table? You see, the banqueting table, like the next bit, you anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. The banqueting table and the anointing and the cup overflowing is about the lavishness of God. God doesn't give us the crumbs that are left. God showers us with lavish gifts. God showers us with the lavishness that comes from the eternal resources that are in heaven. Sometimes we stop the outpouring. Sometimes we don't know how to receive the lavish gifts that God gives us. And I swithered about whether I was going to tell you this morning, but I'm going to tell you. Karen's actually gone up the stairs, and it is an observation about Karen I want to tell you. About a month ago, Karen passed her driving test. And so Gordon and I had talked about cars, and we talked, his car and my car were both too big for her, and we talked about the fact that we had saved up and we could afford to buy another car that was wee enough for her to drive. And so up popped this wee car that we had, somebody had offered us, and it's a wee convertible Mini. It's nearly 10 years old, but it's a beautiful wee Mini. And we looked at it and we thought about it. And now I have to admit that my first thought was, man, does she seriously need a car that looks like that? You know, surely to goodness we could just get her something else. And we looked at it and looked at it, and eventually we bought the Mini for her. And I was talking to somebody else who was telling me that their parents had bought a car for them when they were younger, and about how difficult they had found that because they had got a really hard time from other folks. And I thought, oh man, have we set Karen up to have a really hard time about the fact that, you know, we've done this for her? And it's really, really interesting. I had two conversations with people. One was with somebody who's not a Christian, who I was having this conversation with about, man, have we just gone overboard here? And he said to me, why, if you can manage to do it, would you not lavish gifts on your children? And I thought, okay, you're not a Christian, and you're telling me that. And I thought, actually, that's true. And then I watched Karen, and Karen actually knows who she is. Karen doesn't have an issue with the fact that she is her daddy's favourite. She's her daddy's favourite, but she's her daddy's favourite as well. She doesn't have any issue. And what that has taught me is how you accept a lavish gift, because she just thinks that this is amazing and loves it. And there is nothing in her that's saying, oh man, I don't deserve that, I shouldn't have that, or anything else. Absolutely not, because she knows who she is. And it struck me when I was preparing this that sometimes God wants to lavish things on us, and actually we take a step back and we say, that's not for me. I don't, you know, who am I? I can't receive that. And we might not even do it consciously, but sometimes we do it subconsciously. We have a God who wants to lavish good things on us. The challenge for us is how we receive it. And then goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. There's another translation of this, which I wonder if it's closer to the Hebrew. Instead of follow, it's pursue. Goodness and mercy will pursue me all the days of my life. Follow seems like a bit of a, not a very decisive thing. You're kind of following the person in front, but pursue has got a whole different connotation to it. Do you know that goodness and mercy are after you? That goodness and mercy are pursuing you? Regardless of where you are with the shepherd this morning, goodness and mercy are pursuing you. And the result of being the sheep, of him being the shepherd and us being the sheep and recognizing who he is and the place that he has for us, is that we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. David's heart was to dwell with God in his house forever, and that was all about building the temple, building the tabernacle and all the rest of it. But you see, this is not just about a physical place. So it's not finding a church and sitting in the church, in a cold church forever and ever and ever. It's not about that. It's actually about coming home. Somebody reminded me of this week in the Heidi Baker book that we were reading. Before the summertime, Heidi Baker talks about being swallowed up in his heart. That's what coming home is. It's about being swallowed up in the very heart of God. And you see, there's a day coming, Revelation says, when there'll be no more tears, no more sorrow, no more anything else like that, because God will be among his people. The dwelling place for God will be amongst his people. That we will be swallowed up in the heart of God. And I don't know about you, but actually that's where I would like to be now. He promises that I can have a taste of that just now. When I sort out who he is as the shepherd, what he offers me, what my response is, I can actually have that. So the message that we preach is not pie in the sky when you die. It is the steak on a plate while you wait. Because in actual fact, we can have it, and we can have it now. Let's pray together. Jesus, we thank you that you are our shepherd. We thank you that you want to draw us into that relationship with you, which would be walking and talking, which would be lying down in the green pastures, which would be the place where you can restore our soul. Jesus, we thank you that there is no valley that's deep enough or dark enough or horrible enough that we would go through that you would not be there, that you would not have the resources to help us get through safely to the other side. And Jesus, we thank you that you want to lavish on each of us. Jesus, will you help us to be able to accept what you give us? Will you help us to work out how to accept and how to receive from you, and how not to simply put a barrier up and knock it back? And Jesus, will you let us come home? Will you take us to the place where we can be swallowed up in your heart, where we can know you intimately, where we can know the peace and the security that comes from being right at the heart of who you are? And Jesus, as we go from this place this morning, I pray that you would go with each one of us, that Jesus' words from Psalm 23 would ring in our ears as we leave this place this morning, and that they wouldn't simply ring in our ears till we get to the car, but that you would write them on our hearts this morning. Whatever from that psalm that you want us to take real notice of today, will you write that on our hearts? Will you let us see it at every turn? And will you let it make a difference to who we are and to how we live our lives? So Jesus, we ask for your blessing on us as we leave this place this morning. And may the blessing of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit be with us and remain with us both now and forevermore.